Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, it's Janine Vosper here, and welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. Today, I have Sean Matthews with me. Now, Sean, let me read a little bit about Sean, because I met Sean at a networking event on the Gold Coast recently and went, oh my goodness, we had so many things in common, and about the way we want to encourage women to have a voice, I thought I definitely had to have her on the podcast. So Sean is the owner and founder of Open Arms Health. She assists women to reclaim their time, their voice, their value, and their vision in the process to create love, leadership, and happiness throughout their lives. It sounds absolutely amazing. I can't wait to hear all the points on how we can do that. So Sean believes that we all have a story that has made us who we are today. And sometimes that, particularly women, we can get scared to speak up, which can, you know, make us seem small and stuck where we are. And she believes every woman has a right to have a voice to be heard for what they've been through, whether good, bad, or indifferent. Thank you very much for being on here, Sean. I'm going to absolutely love our conversation.
Thank you, Janine, for having me on.
You're welcome.
Exciting.
It is. Oh, look, I love doing the interviews on the podcast because I just meet so many amazing people that have wonderful ideas and advice to share. But first of all, we need to get to know you a little bit. So tell us about yourself.
Okay. Well, I grew up in Canada, but I was actually born in Southport in the Gold Coast. And then moved from a young age to Canada and grew up in Canada. And then at the age of 19, I moved back to Australia and absolutely loved it so much. I stayed. So I've been here for over 20 years and have fell in love with the place. So I started my journey of traveling quite young. I'm a huge traveler. Love that. And I love the diverse people that I come across. And I absolutely love people in general and helping them in different areas of their life. So that's a little bit about me and my journey in that sense. But what else would you like to know, Janine?
Well, I know that you started counseling. So what led you into that?
Yeah, so I was working with children and then I worked in a travel agency. And I really liked the idea of helping people on their journeys when I was a travel agent. And I thought, you know what, I really want to do something a little bit more meaningful. So I looked into it and I saw this course in counseling and community services. So I thought, why not go back and study after 10 years of being out of school. So that was a bit of a challenge at first. But then I decided, like, let's go and see what happens. And I studied for 7 years doing part-time work and part-time study. And then finished with a degree in my Bachelor of Social Science, which was absolutely rewarding. And a lot of things happened in that time, which I'm not sure if you want me to go into that just yet. But yeah.
Just even taking, you know, the 7 years to study while you're working, I'm sure that you probably come across a lot of your clients that are trying to cram a whole lot into their lives as well and feel possibly that they're getting nowhere or it's really struggling with the stress of trying to get everything done.
Yeah, definitely. I have come across a lot of people, not just clients, a lot of other women and men for that matter, wanting to go back and study after 10, 15 years, and they think it might be too late for them to study. And I tell those people, it's never too late to study, never too late to learn. But juggling everything can be a challenge, and it's really focusing on what you want to focus on and being dedicated to what you want to be dedicated to. So I was very, very dedicated to the social science degree and my learning experience so I can help people in different areas of their life.
And I know when I started studying again, I had two children and it was really quite a different experience. I'd left a school at 15 and when they were toddlers, I'm thinking, what am I going to do now? And jump first of all into a senior English, which was a great place to start because it was a great foundation for everything. I learned to love Shakespeare after that as well. And different poetry, but it was a very different world. And as a young mother myself with young children, it was certainly an anxious experience through certain parts. Obviously over the last 30 plus years since then, just been able to, you know, go from one place to the next and then eventually into, you know, senior management roles, which is very different when you're first starting out. But that whole process of just trying to be everything to everybody is a challenge, isn't it?
It is. There's so many mums. I mean, I wouldn't call myself a stepmother, but my partner has kids and they are teenagers. So I've juggled a business and all those sort of things with teenagers in the house. And I can tell you now from that experience, it has been a juggle, but challenging at times, but you know, you go through it. But a lot of young moms out there, and I know I've spoken to a lot of young moms that have children that are 3 to 5 years of age and they're going back to study and they have such a busy household. They're trying to do everything. You know, us as women, we want to give, and we actually forget about ourselves. And that's the whole reason I got into counseling. And that's actually why I started my business in the first place, was there are so many women out there that give so much and get deflated and forget about themselves and their self-care altogether. And they say, oh, what about me? But they just have no energy left for themselves.
That's a very common theme that comes across a lot of the interviews that I do, whether it's in business or in health or in mental health and wellness as well. Now, I know when you were studying, you had a fair bit of trauma going on in your life as well.
Mm. Yes, I did. And Janine, this is something is very close to my heart. And I'm just going to say that it's still to this day after 8 years, quite emotional. But I do need to tell everyone this story because I believe that every woman and man out there really should understand the idea of grief and what people actually go through. You can be very confident in yourself. And so I'll tell you what happened. I was very independent, always have been. But when I got a phone call from my mother in 2012, saying that she was sick and she had cancer. She was only 61 at the time. So she was very young.
Thank you. That's my age now. So that is very young.
Yeah. I believe it's very young, you know, and it really hit home for myself because I didn't know she was sick. So that was a big bit of a drop for me. I was living in Australia at the time. She was in Canada and I dropped my whole life and went back to Canada to really thinking that she was going to be hospitalized or, you know, we could do home care, things like that. But unfortunately, within 48 hours of me arriving, she passed away in hospital. It was really traumatic for me. It was traumatic for my sister. She knew. I have a sister that's 10 years younger than I am. And it was very traumatic because she was 20 at the time. And we went through a lot of ups and downs in that time. Let's just put it that way. What can I tell you? She had her own business. My mom had her own business. And we had to sort all that out, just the two of us. Because after the funeral, my family went to their homes. You know, I have a lot of family in Vancouver and family in the States. So everyone just went back to their normal lives. And my sister and I were left to do basically rebuild our life and figure out lawyers and figure out my mom's house. We had to sell mom's house. And there was just a lot of ups and downs because we didn't really know what to do, but we just sort of put our kind of mom's hat on and said, okay, look, this is what we're doing. This is what mom would do. Let's get into it and get it done. And that's how we did it. But through that time, if we didn't have each other, I think that it would have been worse off, to be honest.
And that's just such a tragedy to, you know, to be that far away and then only have that short time with your mum before she passed. I really do feel for you in that situation. And I'm imagining now, from you having understood the grief around that when you're having people come to you who are in a grieving situation. And I know people are grieving about their jobs and everything now, and it's not just the loss of a person. There's so much through COVID that people are grieving loss of. It would help because you've experienced that then. Is something that you can be very aware of and
definitely
to be able to help them?
And definitely that is exactly why I want to help women, because when I went through the process, what happened was I was in Canada for a year and then I came back to Australia to rebuild my life. So I left my sister knowing that she was taken care of and things were okay for her. And so then came back to Australia because I absolutely loved it. Australia is my home. And came back, rebuilt my life, and I just thought, you know, this is, what do I do next? Who am I? My life is not the same anymore. And I went through deep grief. But one thing that got me through was my counseling degree. So I learned how to manage my emotions and come out the better, you know, a better side in that respect. And a lot of women out there, I believe, don't speak up enough about their grief because they're ashamed of it. You know, I went through a dark hole, really, a dark space, where I didn't really socialize. And I couldn't understand why I couldn't socialize, because I'm such a social person. But it's not until you go through the grieving process, you don't understand exactly what that is. You want to hide away. You have this shame. You don't know what to say to people. Or in other respects, people don't know what to say to you, mm-hmm. because grief is so different for everyone. So the way I work with women is to help them express themselves in the way that will work for them, because we are all different.
Yes, that's an important factor, isn't it? Everyone does express themselves in a different way and comfortable in a particular frame. But is it a matter of providing more, you know, enabling more confidence with them, or is that to have that voice? Is that how you work?
Yeah, so we go through a process. I mean, everything is a process, as you know, Janine. Everything is a process. And so we go through what happened to them and what got them to where they are today and why they came to see me. A lot of women don't actually even know why they came to see me. There might have been a woman that came to see me, which was just recently, and she wanted to have an intimate relationship with a man. But really, what she needed to heal was the relationships between her parents and her family members before she can start a real relationship with a man. Mm. So that's where it stems from. We don't necessarily go back to childhood. We can. Sometimes I do. But my process is more in the here and now and focusing on what they really want to do. And getting their voice out to me, and so that they can get their voice out to other people that they need to speak to, for instance, their family members or a loved one or their sisters or brothers or colleagues, for instance. Some women don't even know how to speak to their boss.
Mm. Oh, I come across that all the time in a lot of the communication stuff that I do with businesses, starting off around the sales communication, but then it becomes a lot more personal for people. It's not just that sales conversation, and it's knowing how to have that critical conversation, isn't it? The one that is really important to people. And that's the one that scares a lot of people off because, and that they, and I'm using the pronoun we, because I own this myself. We are probably more uncomfortable having the conversation and dealing with the outcome than we are with the anxiety that we, or the trauma we have about leaving it as a status quo.
Very true. Exactly right. You know, a lot of anxiety comes up and we don't even know where it comes from. And it's really how you manage the anxiety and how you, I mean, everyone gets anxiety, but it's when anxiety takes over your life and then you have to rebuild your life or confidence. You know, you have to rebuild your confidence because you've been traumatized or you've gone through grief or you've gone through a certain aspect of your life that you want to change.
And learning skills to do that, and you said there's a process to do that, the process through grieving. And I know, I think I've heard this, you know, so many steps to grieving and that you need to go through to deal with it. But those processes, so what are some of the processes, Sean, that we can, that you can share, that we can, you know, someone will be thinking, oh, that's where I'm sitting at the moment and I know I need to get assistance here, or, you know, I know this is just normal. I think that's a really good part of it too. Just know that is just what it is. And what you're feeling is normal.
Exactly. And that's the first thing. You have to realize that grieving is a normal process and how our grief shows up is different for everyone. So the first step really is accepting your grieving. So it's accepting your grieving, and then next step would be, okay, how am I going to deal with this grief? Do I need to talk it out? Do I need to write it down? Do I need to communicate it in some way, in some form? And knowing how you communicate with people, because everybody communicates differently. You know, a lot of people don't want to have talking therapy, and it's not for everyone, but the people that do need and want talking therapy, they will want to talk it out and then they'll want to write it down. And that's part of my process, is that that's what we do. And then I give them tools. I give the women tools on how to deal with that.
Interesting, that talking therapy. It's for me, as a person that talks a lot for what I do, and especially, you know, if I'm in training sessions or I'm talking to clients, then I definitely am talking a lot.
Yeah.
But when it comes for me personally, when it comes to something very personal, I don't talk. The talking for me is an uncomfortable thing. I'm glad you said that some people are very uncomfortable with that. That's not my processing ways. Mm-hmm. But I suppose everyone has been finding what you need to do personally to process it, I suppose. And we are all so different. I know when my mum passed away, my sister and I have one sister as well, and we both handled it completely different. And years on, it's a very different experience for both of us as well. And to the stage where she even had a heart attack, and the doctor said it was a broken heart caused it through grief and stress. And so it was, and which led her to counselling and finding that there's counsellors and there's counsellors, and then finding someone that she could resonate with and go work through it. But it's as you said earlier on, it's all very different for different people as well that need to work through things very differently.
It is. And then you bring up a good point too, Janine, and it's not just grief, it's the stress that comes with the grief, because some people don't want to talk about it. And as I said, people can write it down and let it out, and that's how they let it out. Or, you know, forms of exercise and eating healthy and getting your diet right. I mean, it's very hard when you're very emotional, and a lot of women, you know, we are emotional creatures and we do like to talk, but, you know, sometimes when it's difficult, we don't like to talk, we like to eat. So it is basically trying to take control of your life and take that step back and say, look, I'm grieving right now. I need to sleep. or I need to eat a banana or eat something healthy instead of going for that chip bag, or instead of running ourselves to the ground, because some women out there, which I have found, and my mom was one of them, which is unfortunate because I did learn a lot from her, good and bad, right? But you give and you give and you give, and you work, but we as women can work and work and work ourselves to the bone, and then we have nothing left, as I said at the beginning, we just have nothing left to give. And that's really, it's not great for our well-being at all. We need to learn how to relax, calm down, slow our breath down, and understand that our work's going to be there tomorrow. Our health is the most important, and our mental health is high on our list, because it goes, mental health and physical health go hand in hand.
Yes, that's one of the things that I remind myself. My background is as a aerobic instructor for 10 years, and so I have that, you know, mental space of having to move the body somehow most days. It's got slightly less than it used to be when it was compulsive, but now it's not, it's just healthy now. But it, for me, that going out and walking is my way of just going, I need to detach from things, and I just need to, I tend to listen to either blogs or something while I'm walking, so again it switches it off and there's not an over processing of things. You're just in the space and trying to focus on the space you're in and be observant. But that's mine, that's my go-to for when I just need to chill out.
Yeah, to relax.
Yeah.
Yes. Because your house is full of boys, isn't it?
Well, they're out of home, so there's no, just one boy.
Yeah.
and he's got a man shed. So
that's good. So you need a woman's shed then.
it's my office, which is my place, happy place to go as well. And I know better. And I know that I'll come into the office early in the morning and I will start working, and with the intention that I'm going to do some yoga stretches or I'm going to do something else. And then it's, you know, lunchtime, and that doesn't happen then. And the alarm's gone, went off at 9 a.m. where I was meant to do it. And I'm just working now, and putting off that. And through COVID, I kept going, because I got back into a really regular exercise program, and I went, right, I'm going to now make health the focus. And it just got so busy since then.
Yeah.
But I know it's gone. Okay. Hasn't happened today. It's 10 o'clock at night and that hasn't happened. We'll do it tomorrow. And I am sure I am not the only person out there that it's jumped back into those pre-COVID habits. And when all of these good intentions, that, you know, we had the opportunity to shift things in our world, sort of have gone by the by. Especially here in Queensland, because we've had more freedom quicker than a lot of
places. And we have, and we are very lucky that we have had, a lot more freedom than a lot of people all around the world have. I know Canada is still wearing masks, you know, around. So we are very lucky here. But what I can say about, you know, working women, and you in particular, what you just said, that you say, oh, I'll do it tomorrow, because the day goes by like that, doesn't it? It just goes so quickly, and you don't get off your off your desk. And some days I find myself doing that too. But the one thing that actually has worked for me, it might not work for everyone, but I'll just give a tip, is that set an alarm every 2 hours, so that you get up and go for a walk or stretch or have something to eat every 2 hours. And then that will remind you, okay, right, I got to get up. It's because it's for myself, you know, self-care, and it's for my mental health, so I can get back into work and be focused.
That is a good point. That's another intention that I've had to do as well. So I'll stick to that. There's a Pomodoro, which is a time management tool to be able to work to, and it works through periods of time, and you may, and they're in 20 minutes usually, and you may assign 3 Pomodoros to a particular task or, and then go and do the same thing. And yes, again, forgotten about that. So that's a great tip on that. And it just means you just stay focused. One of my things that I do take time for now, and I think I mentioned the last podcast, because we were talking about food in the last one. It was the person that helps people with weight loss, and very much, very similar sort of things you're talking about, is that we give too much. And then, at 9 o'clock at night, when everyone's gone to bed, we give ourselves, which is the wrong food often. And I forget where I was going with this, but we were talking about the giving part. Mm-hmm. Just setting, you know, things for yourself that are those reminders, or rather than rules, as guidelines that we stick to as well, that we'll, you know, this is what we're doing again, because I know health is so important. I've just spent time on the weekend with family, and I know that, you know, financially they're very, very successful, health wise just not, and it's so sad for them because they can't appreciate and live, be able to live the life that they want to live. And, you know, work doesn't matter now. If you can't get your health back, it just doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, exactly. If you don't have your health, even, you can't do the things that you want to do. And you don't have the energy to do them either. Another thing that I've been doing a lot lately is grounding myself. And that is scientifically proven, that grounding is one part of scientifically, biologically, great for your body and great to center yourself.
What process do you use for that, Sean?
Well, I go to the beach and I stick my feet on the sand and I go for even this morning, I was up at 5 o'clock this morning, going for a long walk on the beach and just getting in the water. And yeah, it's amazing. Had the sun on my face. And that's all part of health. You know, it's not just one aspect. It's all aspects.
The beach and the surf, I've always got to go barefoot on the beach, because I've got to be able to walk into the water as well when I'm walking on the beach. It has that automatic cleansing, but that grounding, and that's one of the things I walk regularly in a bushland area, and it's that being back in nature, isn't it? Can't quite go barefoot there, but it's that whole process of just being in nature. So that's one way of grounding. Is there any other way, techniques that you have that you can suggest for grounding as well?
Oh, for grounding, meditation is a really big one. You could even meditate for 5 minutes and you could ground yourself and center yourself and then get back into work. I do that. If I lose focus on something that I'm doing at the computer, because you get lots of emails throughout the day and phone calls and things like that, to ground yourself, I would just do a 5-minute meditation and then get back into it. Have a drink of water like you just did. Get back into it, you know?
It's one of the things I definitely do all day long, is keep up that water intake. And a 5-minute meditation, is there focus on something, you know, focus on a candle or focus on a mantra? Because that you often recommend 5-minute meditations as well to people, and everyone does them a little bit differently. And so for people that haven't meditated, a 5-minute meditation is a great way to start, because you don't have to clear your thoughts. You just have to think of something else, don't you?
Exactly. Well, I do have one here that I was going to bring up, and it's not even a 5-minute meditation. It's probably about 2-minute meditation. Would you like to do it in your chair?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Let's do it.
Okay. It's one of a relaxation technique that I do. Okay.
Now, I just want, if anyone's listening to this in the car, don't do it.
Yes.
Wait till you get home to practice it.
Yes. Don't do it while you're driving. We don't want you to crash. You need to be in a quiet spot at home either lying down or sitting up, but this one is sitting in your chair. So it's perfect for you, Janine. And as I said, it won't even take 2 minutes. Okay, so if you bring yourself up to the present moment, please sit back up straight in your chair and close your eyes. Take a few deep breaths in through your nose and out through your mouth. Again, breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth. Then ask yourself, what is going on with me at this moment? You simply allow yourself to observe what is happening, labeling any thoughts that you have and leave them alone. Just be prepared to let them float away and attend to your breathing, or simply take in the surroundings and allow your thoughts to float away. Take a deep breath in through your nose and out through your mouth. When you're ready, you can open your eyes.
That is nice and quick, and it does. It helps you stop overthinking. Thank you for sharing that, because I think that'll be very worthwhile for people to practice. And certainly it's a great reminder for me to do as well when I do my 2-hour alarm and my 2-minute meditation.
Yeah, some people don't even know how to meditate, or they say, oh, I don't know what to do in meditation. But that is just a small form of meditation. Just to stop, really.
One of the things that I picked up again over COVID, I learned to play the flute as an adult. And so I got it out again through COVID. I hadn't used it in quite a while. And that was just focused on that. And that's a form of meditation as well. Or even just walking and being observant around you is a form of meditation. Mm. I know when it was meant to be running a retreat in Bali with a business partner who does yoga and Chinese medicine and exercise physiology in June, but that didn't happen. And now we're running it in March in Tenterfield in New South Wales instead. And she does a chocolate meditation where you just take ages to eat, you know, a piece of chocolate. And I thought, oh, that's a popular one.
That's a very popular one. Haven't heard that one before. Yeah. I need to hear more about that one.
And then basically it's just being observant. Mm. And that's where your focus is. And normally, you know, with everything that we do, we do it automatically without thinking about it at all. And it's placing the thought process, even in the eating process, it's focusing on every bite you take. And and we forget, we really do forget to do that. And that is, you know, it is an excellent stress remover as well. I know I had some dental work done recently, and I had to really concentrate on chewing it. And I'm still doing that at the moment. And so I'm sitting at the table ages after other people finish. Mm. But it's a real process, and it's brought back the attention to the food, which is it's quite a different space rather than just shoveling, you know, which is what we tend to do.
We do. That's right. Mindful eating is very big. Not a lot of people understand mindful eating. If you've ever heard of it, it's really tasting your food instead of gobbling it down, as you said. Mm. We don't taste our food anymore. We're in a rush to get this done and get that done, and to slow ourselves down and slow our minds down to bring ourselves to the present moment and the here and now. And that's part of the reason I do what I do, is because a lot of women are like, I don't know if you've heard the analogy, little puppy dogs, and where our minds are like puppy dogs.
No, I haven't heard that.
Like chasing our tails. Yeah. So we're running, some people are running around in circles around and around and around. And we're going so quickly that we're not really getting anything done. We're just going round and round in circles.
Yeah.
So our mind is a little bit like that. A bit, I wouldn't say, I don't want to use the word scattered, but for viewers and for people that are listening, that's what I would say. Our mind is very busy.
Yes. Did I hear a dog barking when you started talking about that?
Oh, maybe it was my neighbors. I don't have a dog. It was just, I like one.
I don't know whether it was a sound. Like, I'm going to have to go back and listen to this part because I thought, as soon as you started talking about a dog, I heard a dog barking. Whether it was just me, I don't know.
Yeah, no, maybe it was. Maybe it was my dog, my next door neighbor's dog.
Oh, I love how that works. Now, you've worked with a lot of people when you first graduated in drug and alcohol abuse as well. Mm-hmm. So what did you learn from that, particularly that you can apply within your practice?
As I said before, there's a lot of different people with different mental illnesses, and you really just don't know a person until you sit down and talk to them and really understand their story. There is a lot of people that are out there that are on Centrelink payments and really don't have the money to go to somebody, and they really don't know where to turn because they've lost trust in everything. They've lost trust in the government. They've lost trust in their family members. They've even lost trust in themselves. So my idea of a counselor, and partly it was more of a social worker job that I did home visits, was to build that trust with them so that they can confide in me and really go through their process and say, okay, so how can you help me? What can you connect me to? And how are you different from the last person? And to be honest, that was a huge challenge because they didn't have any trust, because the last person said, no, they didn't even show up sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'll be back every week. And I was there and I was consistent for 2 years with the same clients. And I built that trust. I built that respect. And then finally, we made some progress. And they thanked me in the end, which was fantastic. And I hope for the best for them, because it is hard in that non-for-profit organizations, because they are government run really at the end of the day. And I learned that I wanted to help more people in a more genuine way and more people. That's why I started my business, because I found I was out of control of what the government was doing. And unfortunately, some of us that are working for these organizations get blamed by these clients because they don't have that understanding. Mm-hmm. But really, at the end of the day, I learned that building trust is the number one thing for people out there. If you don't build the trust, they're never going to tell you anything. And they will have their guard up and they'll get angry. There's a lot of anger out there.
Mm. And if people feel that they've been let down, then they definitely, trust is, yeah, it is such a big thing. And I think in any relationship, trust is probably the most overriding factor of anything, isn't it? And it's a little bit what we were talking about before, that even trusting that if you have a critical conversation with somebody, that mm-hmm. it's going to be okay if you do that. So mm-hmm. yes. I worked with a client recently to help her put her presentation together, because she's got an amazing story to tell. But she came from the police force and then had PTSD, and so she's got, as you can imagine, a 20-year career police officer who mm-hmm. has got a lot of stories mm-hmm. That she's been living with for a long time. But that was her thing when she first went to counselors. She didn't trust the people that had been assigned by the business, the police force, because if she, in her words, and she doesn't mind my sharing because she shares the story, is that she didn't want them to take her gun away, and because it was part of who, you know, that couldn't trust them to tell them the truth. But until she eventually realized that she had to trust somebody with her story and trust somebody with everything that she needed to share, that was she able to move forward. But until then, it's a bit of a denial as well, I think, that people, if they can't open up to anybody, then it's not really true. It's not really a problem.
That's true. Yeah, that's the scariest part for a lot of people. And really, losing their identity, what is going to happen? A lot of people would say in, you know, post-traumatic stress is that, oh, shoot, what's going to happen when I tell my story? You know, what am I going to do? What are they going to do with that information? And they lose their identity, or they think they're going to lose their identity.
Especially in a position of authority and power, you know, talking about soldiers and police, or anyone, ambulance officers, anyone that's sort of in those positions where the PTSD is very real. So what's the main issues that you see when you're working with clients? Is there anything, you know, we've talked about quite a few different things here, but anything that's pretty consistent across with the women that you see?
Actually, two major things that I work with women and are relationships, and that's mostly relationships with themselves. So valuing their own time, valuing their own space, and valuing their own voice. Really, we talk a lot about the events in their life, but their relationships with their family members or relationships with their colleagues. And a lot of women find, it's not even corporate, but hospitality, really fast-paced industries, mostly hospitality and corporate, really, they think it's so fast-paced, but they don't know if they really want to do it anymore. They just go, oh, I'm giving all this time and space and energy, and they just don't know how to cope with it. And I work on strategies with them to get them through the day and realize if they even want to be in that industry anymore, or if they just need that moment in time to space it out, take a deep breath, and know how to manage their stress levels. Because a little bit of stress is okay. But it's when you go over the stress and you're stressed every single hour of every single day, that's when it really impacts your whole life.
It does, and definitely with your health. And it creates dis-ease as well.
It does.
Because of that. And there were some good, great points there as well, if we're looking for extra 3 points to take away, it's usually what I ask clients. What, you know, if there's women who are listening to this who are finding that, you know, they're living with a case of overwhelm or feeling stuck, you know, what would be the three main things that they could apply now that will help them and help them get out of that process or where they're stuck? The word again.
Yes. Well, I would stop just what you're doing, even listening to this podcast, just stop it and write down three things that are in your head right now. And writing something down, journaling anything, really helps you stop your mind and gets everything in your head onto paper, and then you can get back into your heart, which is very hard for women, I believe. It was hard for me because I was living a lot in my head and not in my heart. But the more you live in your heart, the better your life will be, I believe.
And that's an unusual thing, but I completely agree with you. But it's normally because we, you know, people will think that women are more emotional, which then you would think applies to the heart, but it's not necessarily, though, is it? Because we're in our heads a lot.
Yeah, because we're doing tasks every second of the day. But if you stop, breathe, write things down that's in your head, and then you can get back to it, you're actually better at giving more. When you give to yourself first, you can give to more people.
Totally agree. So number two.
So number two, I would say take care of yourself first and be who you are. Just get into that rhythm of being who you are, just sitting back, relaxing, doing something fun for yourself. That's the other thing that people forget. And women especially, you know, they work, have to make money. I have to do this. I have to do that. But when was the last time you went to ride a bike? Or when was the last time you did something fun?
I speak on work-life balance, and when I speak to the women, it's usually the first question I ask is, well, one of the first questions, I don't want to confront people straight away, but I ask about, well, what do you do for yourself?
Yeah.
And it's usually crickets. You know, I'll go to the hairdressers. Well, no, that's something, that's maintenance. You have to do that anyway.
Exactly.
Well, I'll go for a run. Well, that's, you know, that's health. That's, it's great, but it's not really for yourself. What do you do that's fun? Unless you think running is fun for you.
Yeah.
It is. Most people can't say what they do for themselves as fun. One of my fun things is theatre, and
we have that in common too.
Very good. I just booked with a girlfriend and probably my daughter-in-law as well. I've just booked tickets to the Pink Flamingo on the Gold Coast, which is a Spiegel tent sort of thing, but it's a permanent fixture. All cabaret and all Spiegel tent type of raunchy type shows, and
for
Saturday
for
Saturday night. Yeah, I thought that will be a whole lot of fun. So
that's good.
Yeah, so a girlfriend and I we'll do that. But that's one of the things for me. And what, you know, but it's important to look at the paying the money for those things, and most of them will go, oh no, that's a bit expensive, but then they'll go and spend the same amount on their children and on a pair of shoes, or you know, a pair of fancy joggers or something that it's not necessary, and put themselves off, and always giving as someone ahead of themselves. And and I think you can be better and do better for other people if you have got the resources yourself.
For sure, that's exactly right, and that's what I help women do. Relationships is the relationship with yourself is the number one, and then you can help other people and give more to what you want to give to causes, anything like that. So those would be my number two. Those are the number two that I would say. And then number three, look, I would say that number three would be, don't be afraid to share your emotions.
Okay.
With your spouse, with your son, your daughter, with somebody that's close to you even. And if they don't work, then there's obviously other alternatives that you can go to.
And I think that is a really important tip, Sean, that you know, we're allowed to do that, and we can do it. You know, there's times in our lives where we need to be able to do that, whether it is through grief or through it fear of a particular situation, or just that overwhelm when you just need to go, you know what, I don't need a solution, I just need an ear.
Yeah. Some people, that's all they need.
Yeah.
I have a new client. She's actually quite young. And I believe that's all she needs is an ear. And she doesn't want to talk to her family. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a lot of people need.
Yeah. It's an important factor. And finding someone to be that ear is so important as well. So how can people get in touch with you?
Well, I have a website, and it's called SeanMatthewsOAH.com. My business name is Open Arms Health. So you can even just Google Open Arms Health Sean Matthews, and I'll come up. You can book a call right on my website. My first 15 minutes is a complimentary call. So we just go through the basics of, hi, how are you? Get to know each other and see how we can work together.
Well, that's good. And I think that's, as we said before, that's an important part, that trust factor, isn't it? That your people can feel comfortable with you to be able to know that you're going to be the right person to speak with.
Exactly.
Yeah. And some people just resonate with different people. And others. I know I do the same business coaches that I work with. You know, there's certain ones that you can just resonate to and others not so much. So,
that's an
important
true.
Factor. So that's just spelling that, though. And it'll be in the program notes. But Shawn is S-H-A-W-N and Matthews is with the double T, MATTHEWSOAH.com. Anything else that we haven't covered that you want to add, Shawn?
Well, we've covered a lot today, Janine, and thank you for sharing your stories. I like the fact that you like theater, so we might have to talk more about that.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be at the Spiegel show on Saturday night.
That's good.
Yeah.
But other than that, if anyone would like to contact me and just have that 15-minute call to see if we're the right fit, then that's it.
And I think that's really important. And that's the beauty of doing things. Don't have to do everything face-to-face now either. We've got lots of other options that we may not have considered before. So thank you for all of that information. I really, really enjoyed our conversation.
Yes, thank you, Janine, for having me on.
Welcome. And that's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. I am Janine Vosper, your host. You can find me and all of my contact details at janinevosper.com or speechperfect.com.au. And I do offer a 20-minute complimentary strategy call. So if there's things in your business that aren't necessarily going the way that you want them to go, then please do get in touch and we can have a conversation about it. And again, no obligation, just see whether there's something that I can help, or I might be able to recommend somebody else that can help you with what you're working on as well. Leave a 5-star review if you've loved this interview, and also happy if you do that on a Google review as well. Have an amazing, amazing rest of your day, and I'll be very pleased to see you back and hear you back and have you there as a listener on the next episode of the We Are Women podcast. Bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.